What catastrophic events happened on Lake Michigan within days of each other and still wasn't the top story? What monumental event captured front page headlines during that week in almost every newspaper? Find out now on this episode of Top Fold. Welcome to Top Fold, a podcast about all the news that would have been. I'm your host, Luke Heffley. Here at Top Fold, we explore monumental events that didn't make the top story only because that spot was already taken. The SS Milwaukee, a train car ferry, was due to dock at Grand Haven, Michigan, but it was late, very late. The ship was making a return voyage from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, across Lake Michigan, and had traveled this route many times. Loaded with 27 railroad cars filled with lumber, food, and automobiles, along with a crew of 52 men, the SS Milwaukee left the Wisconsin port in a severe storm. Although routine to battle the elements, this was the worst storm on Lake Michigan in a quarter of a century. In extreme cases, it might take more than 20 hours to travel the normally 6-hour voyage, but now it had been 36 since the Milwaukee had set off. Family members feared the worst, as did workers for the ship's owner, the Grand Trunk Company. When another ship, the SS Grand Rapids, which had left much later and was on the same path as the Milwaukee, docked at Grand Haven, people realized something very bad had happened. Around 48 hours after the launch, four bodies in life jackets bearing the SS Milwaukee's name were found off the coast of Kenosha, Wisconsin, and one of them was the captain's. 2 days later, a lifeboat with four dead crew members was found floating near Holland, Michigan, on the opposite side of the lake. Captain Robert McKay, known as Bad Weather McKay, had decided to take the ship out when almost no one else would have. After making the trip to Milwaukee earlier in the day, he decided to set off on the return route to Grand Haven. Three crew members were so convinced that the ship wouldn't make the return voyage, they went to the movie theater and didn't return. Another crew member, also believing the ship wouldn't launch, was delivering messages in town and failed to make it back in time. Little is known about the SS Milwaukee's final hours on the rough waters, but on an empty lifeboat near Grand Haven, Michigan, the ship's message case was found, bearing a note that said, "The ship is making water fast. We have turned around and headed for Milwaukee. Pumps are working, but Seagate has been in and can't keep the water out. Flicker is flooded. Seas are tremendous. Things look bad. Crew roll is about the same as last payday. A.R. Seddon, purser." Flicker is slang for the sleeping quarters, and the purser is the officer who keeps the financial records on board the ship. All 52 men on board died. Only 15 bodies, including the captain's, were ever recovered. While debris and dead bodies from the SS Milwaukee were still floating to shore, the SS Wisconsin, a 208-foot iron-hulled package steamer built for the Goodrich Line, left Chicago bound for Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Boasting a rich history, this ship had been in service for almost 50 years. Changing names and owners numerous times, the vessel was once called General Robert M. O'Reilly and served in New York Harbor as a hospital ship during World War I. On this fateful day, another horrendous storm caused the SS Wisconsin to take on water, and while carrying a large quantity of freight, iron castings, and automobiles, the pumps failed, and just like the Milwaukee, this ship plunged to its doom. The Coast Guard, along with a tugboat, were able to rescue the four passengers and 48 members of the crew. The rest, along with Captain D.H. Morrison, stayed with the ship, hoping a larger vessel would be able to tow her to shore. Before that ship could arrive, the Wisconsin sank and 9 crew members, including the captain, died. Unbelievably, just 2 days later, another disaster happened on Lake Michigan. This time, the Great Lakes freighter SS Senator, a steel-hulled, 420-foot-long, 50-foot-wide ship, left Milwaukee for Detroit, Michigan with a cargo load of 268 brand-new Nash automobiles. Valued at $251,000, which is almost $4.5 million today, the cars were bound for dealerships across Michigan and the Midwest, destined to be sold to doctors, lawyers, or bankers. Dense fog reduced visibility to less than 100 feet. Captain George H. Kinch sounded the fog signals, but they didn't help. The SS Senator ran full speed into another ship, the Marquette. That ship was able to limp to shore, but the Senator quickly took on water and just 8 minutes after the collision, slid beneath the waves. Most of the crew were saved, but sadly, 9 perished. in just over 1 week, three massive cargo ships, with at least 70 lives lost, now rested at the bottom of Lake Michigan, and this wasn't what was making headlines across the nation. What could have kept these maritime tragedies from being the top story? What could have pushed these watery graves to the back pages, if even mentioned at all? What was happening 750 miles away that was changing how most Americans would live for decades to come? At the same time millions of dollars of cargo were lost in three shipwrecks, millions of Americans across the nation were losing their possessions to a different kind of wreck, the great stock market crash of 1929. That's right. On October 29, 1929, a day now known as Black Tuesday, the SS Wisconsin sank in Lake Michigan, and the stock market tanked. Just days earlier, the SS Milwaukee, along with 52 lives, had been lost. And 2 days after the great crash, the SS Senator plunged to the bottom of the cold, dark waters. While three massive ships sank in just over a week, many Americans' entire fortune also had taken a very deep dive. What caused the market to crash? The Dow Jones Industrial Average had increased by sixfold during the Roaring Twenties. Average citizens wanted to get into the market because everyone said it was a sure thing. A new industry of brokerage houses, investment trusts, and margin accounts emerged, enabling ordinary people to purchase stocks with borrowed funds. Putting up just 10% and borrowing the rest, buyers would use the stocks as collateral for the loans. Yet there were signs something wasn't right. In February of 1929, the Federal Reserve issued a warning saying member banks shouldn't borrow money to make speculative loans. No one listened. On July 26, 1929, for example, the Goldman Sachs Trading Corporation launched an investment trust called the Shenandoah Corporation. It closed the day 106% higher than the opening bell. In August, the Shenandoah Corporation launched its own investment trust called Blue Ridge Corporation. Investors could now trade their blue-chip stocks for shares in this faster-rising but unproven company. Such financial moves were happening all over the nation. On September 3rd, the Dow hit 381.2, a 27% gain in just 3 months. On October 21st, a Monday, volume was huge, with almost 6.1 million shares trading, the third highest in history. The ticker tape lagged and wouldn't catch up until an hour and 40 minutes after the market closed. Though this was a common event on heavily traded days, few cared because most days they just ended up richer. This day was different because many didn't realize they had lost a great deal of money until after the close. On October 23rd, while the SS Milwaukee was still missing, there was a 6% loss in the market and margin calls went out. Investors had no choice but to sell at whatever price they could get or find collateral to cover the investment. On October 24th, the day families of the SS Milwaukee realized their loved ones had died, and what was later called Black Thursday, almost 13 million shares were traded. The ticker tape fell behind again, and people sold because they didn't know where prices stood. The problem was, there were very few buyers. People panicked. Trying to stabilize the market, the heads of the New York banks met with Thomas Lamont, a senior partner from J.P. Morgan, and agreed to pool their resources to make multiple orders. With the bankers backing him, Richard Whitney, vice president of the stock exchange, walked to the post for the U.S. Steel and confidently ordered 10,000 shares at $205 each, $5 above the current price. He repeated similar orders at other posts, purchasing blue-chip stocks totaling $20 million, equivalent to over $350 million in today's money. The market recovered from the earlier dive as the heads of multiple prominent banks and investment firms boasted that the unrest was over and that things were headed upward in the future. Even President Herbert Hoover proclaimed, "The fundamental business of the country, that is the production and distribution of commodities, is on a sound and prosperous basis." The following day, the 25th, the stock market ended the day higher, and headlines in the evening editions across the country claimed that the New York bank's actions the previous day returned confidence in the market. On Saturday, the 26th, around 2 million shares were traded, but rumor had it that many of the bankers who supported the market just 2 days earlier had now sold most of their shares. On October 28th, it was bad. Now known as Black Monday, this is the first day of a deep sell-off, and trading volume topped 9.2 million shares. Many blue-chip companies lost massive amounts of value. the Dow was off almost 13%. The only thing that stopped the sell-off was the closing bell. People knew the next day was going to be horrendous. October 29th, 1929, known as Black Tuesday, the opening bell couldn't even be heard for the screams of sell, sell. In the first 3 minutes alone, almost 3 million shares totaling over $2 million, equivalent to almost $35 million in today's dollars, were sold. Everyone tried to sell, but there were no buyers, and stock prices crashed. General Electric fell from a high in September of $3.96 to $2.10. American Telephone and Telegraph, AT&T, dropped 100 points. DuPont plunged from a summer high of 217 to 80, and Radio Corporation of America, better known as RCA, tumbled from 505 to 26. Volume hit 16.4 million shares, a record, and the stock ticker fell behind by 2.5 hours. When the bell rang, the Dow closed at 230.1, another 12% loss. Over $14 billion of wealth, which would currently be $243 billion, was lost on that one day. Mere hours after the closing bell of the worst day in the stock market history at the time, the SS Wisconsin surrendered to the brutal waves of Lake Michigan. Trying to stave off the financial crisis, the New York Federal Reserve immediately purchased government securities on the open market. They lowered the discount rate and assured commercial banks they would supply the reserves they needed. This enabled financial institutions to remain open and satisfy the demand of customers during the crisis. These actions were controversial, and many complained that the actions had exceeded the New York Fed's authority. After many of the bankers had searched out reporters to tell them that the market was sound and people should reinvest, headlines across the nation were similar to the New York Times proclaiming, "Stocks up again, a flood of buying." The market was actually up on October 31, 1929, the day the SS Senator sank, but the rally was short-lived. The crash didn't just affect Wall Street brokers, for this money had come from thousands of banks and millions of Americans who were caught up in the whirlwinds of the idea that they just couldn't lose. While only 10% of all Americans had directly invested in the market, over 90% of the banks had. Banks, facing massive debt and trying to protect their assets, demanded full payments for the loans they had provided. Since most people couldn't afford to pay, they had their stocks sold immediately, wiping out their life savings in minutes. Yet their debt to the banks remained. Thousands of banks would close over the next few years, leaving their customers penniless. While commercial banks were protected, the crash devastated commerce and manufacturing. Average citizens lost their life savings and their jobs and couldn't pay their bills. Big ticket items, like the cars at the bottom of Lake Michigan, which had been bought with credit, saw a huge decline in demand. Unemployment rose, but not the market. While bodies were still floating up to shore and authorities were investigating what happened to the three large ships and who was at fault, the stock market continued to plummet. On November 13th, it hit the low for the year. The Times average fell from a peak of 452 to 224, and the Dow had fallen from 381 to 198.7. both down by 50% from their peak in a little over 2 months. The recession that had started in the summer of 1929 turned into the Great Depression and changed American lives forever. On July 8, 1932, the Dow hit its bottom at 41.2, almost a 90% decline from its peak just 3 short years earlier. In that same year, 1932, the U.S. Senate established the PCORA Commission to study the causes of the stock market crash. The following year, 1933, Congress passed the Glass-Steagall Act, mandating a separation between commercial banks, which take deposits and extend loans, and investment banks, which underwrite, issue, and distribute stocks and bonds. There were also notable changes to cargo ships after these 3 shipwrecks. Every vessel had to have two-way communication, and sea gates were reinforced and required to be much higher than previously allowed. It would take until November 23, 1954, 25 years, for the market to climb back to the pre-crash high, with the Dow closing at 382.74. In April of 1972, the SS Milwaukee shipwreck was located 3 miles offshore and just 7 miles from Milwaukee. 125 feet down, the ship is upright and train cars can still be spotted on the lake's floor. The ship's engine and propellers remain intact. The SS Wisconsin sits upright around 130 feet below the surface, just 6 miles east of Kenosha. In 1936, men with full diving suits, commonly known as hard hats, blasted a hole in the side of the ship with hopes of salvaging the contents. There was little worth recovering. It was rediscovered in 1963 and has since become a popular dive site. Experienced divers can enter the sunken ship and view machinery and cargo, including at least three automobiles. In 2014, Scuba Diving Magazine listed it as one of the best 25 wrecks in U.S. waters. The SS Senator, with its cargo of 268 Nash automobiles, wasn't discovered until June 10, 2005. Using an ROV, a remotely operated vehicle, it was located 415 feet below the surface, 16 miles east of Port Washington, Wisconsin. At such depth, it wasn't until August of 2017 that divers were able to see the site firsthand. The Senator is sitting upright with the pilot house and engineering spaces intact. Cars that were on deck have slid off the ship and are resting next to it. Those that remain inside the hole are still chained in place, and because of the cold water, look almost exactly as they did in 1929. It is considered the largest unmodified collection of Nash automobiles known to exist. Untouched relics whose intended drivers perished long ago. Three massive ships with millions of dollars of cargo and at least 70 lives lost, sinking in Lake Michigan in just over a week, couldn't take the headlines away from a nation whose wealth was sinking even faster. And there you have it, all the news that would have been. Thank you for joining us this week on Top Fold. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Top Fold Podcast, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen to your favorite podcast. All my sources and research can be found at topfold.buzzsprout.com. There, along with other things that bring history to life. I'd like to thank David Wagler for the music, and if you like the show, please rate us and give us a review, or simply tell a friend. That would be great. So until next time, there you have it. All the news that would have been.